Celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves, Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
Is your boat registered and insured for the summer season? Most boats must have proof of insurance on board and be properly registered with bow numbers and stickers. Take the Utah Boating or Coast Guard Auxiliary courses and you just might get a discount on your insurance. For a copy, call 801-538-BOAT. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
Faster Utah empowers teachers, administrators, and other school staff to defend themselves in case of a school shooting. We teach advanced firearms and trauma first aid skills. Graduates of the Faster program pass the same post-qualification shoot as Utah law enforcement. For more information and find out how you can help, go to fasterutah.org.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
Hi, I'm Phil Douglas from the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources, and I'd like to invite you to put a little wild in your life with a unique chance to see wild elk. Each winter, the DWR conducts sleigh rides to see Rocky Mountain elk at the Hardware Wildlife Management Area, located 17 miles east of Hiram, Utah, in the beautiful Blacksmith Fork Canyon. For hours, directions, and ticket prices, visit our website. Come join us on the sleighs. Oh, what fun it is to ride.
This year, give the gift of fun. Come to Sportsman's Warehouse to check off your Christmas shopping list. At Sportsman's Warehouse, you'll find the gifts that keep on giving. Products your family and friends can use throughout the year in all their outdoor pursuits. Whether their passion is hunting, fishing, camping, hiking, or anything in between, Sportsman's Warehouse has the perfect gift. Still can't decide? A gift card is always a favorite if it's from Sportsman's Warehouse. Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside.
Kindness. It's a single smile, a thoughtful word, a small, unexpected gesture. Whatever the act may be, it's something we call kindness. Yet sometimes in such a chaotic world, people forget the power that kindness holds. Kindness can brighten a moment, lift someone's spirits, turn a bad day into a good story. Kindness can make someone's week or month or year. Kindness can restore faith in humanity, and some say it can even make us healthier. All with a simple, small, perhaps unseen or anonymous act. So, think about this. What would happen if a small act of kindness sparked another small act of kindness, and then another, and another, and another? What if kindness became contagious, and all the small gestures done by many would make an impact felt around the nation, around the world? Imagine that power. And all it takes is one kind act a day.
Ty Hunter joins us once again with Utah's boating program. Thank you again for taking a few minutes with us.
Hey, thanks again, Brian, and thanks all again for all you out there in Radio Land that will be listening to me here for a bit.
I'm excited to have you back on the program. We're in the holiday mode right now. This has been an interesting year. Water levels are up quite a bit from last year. I know waterfowl hunters, I'm seeing them every day out on Provo Bay. There's a line of them early in the morning with all their dogs and their duck boats and everything. They're excited to get out there on the water. What are some suggestions or reminders for folks getting out there on the water for the waterfowl hunts?
Well, the waterfowl hunt is number one. You dress for the conditions that are out there, the water temperature that may be there too. You may think that you're in shallow water, but make sure you have all the safety equipment on your boat. I know there's not a whole lot of room on there, and because of that, because there's not a whole lot of room on these boats, make sure not only you're taking care of the safety equipment, but as you add the safety equipment in, your passengers, the dog, all the camouflage and reed and covering and everything that's in there and the lunches and whatever you may do if you cook, what does that do to the weight limit on that boat? So make sure your boat is not overloaded. I can tell you the time that I worked at Utah Lake that it just was amazing to see how over capacity boats were at and really how much freeboard, that amount of space from the very top of the boat to the waterline. And when that number gets smaller, that's not a good thing, because if you have the wind come up and a little bit of chop on that, it could start splashing water in your boat. And that really means that you're over capacity. So you can look in and do equations. I don't have the one on the top of my head of how to figure that out. You can Google that or use whatever you want at finding the capacity of your vessel. Or you can email us and we'll send you an equation. It's more of a rule of thumb. That's just the big deal, is to make sure your boat is not overloaded. And if you have a newer boat, they should have a tag in there, a capacity tag on that boat that will tell you how much weight you can have in there.
A lot of times they do have a little sticker on there or something that will tell you what its maximum capacity is, and then you just got to run some numbers up there. How much is each of the passengers? How much is my dog? The equipment? Decoys? It doesn't take much. It goes up very fast.
Yeah, it goes up real fast for small boats like that. It adds up very quickly, and I don't think people see that all the time. They just want to make sure they have all the gear out there, because they don't want to be out there and not have it. It can make a good situation bad real quick if you're not paying attention to how you're loading your boat.
There can be too much of a good thing.
Yes. Yes, there can be too much of a good thing.
What's the biggest problem, or what's the biggest mistake or challenge that waterfowl anglers make, or what's the biggest error in their judgment or what they're doing as far as waterfowl hunts?
I think there's three items. Number one, waterfowlers, they're out there. I can remember going out when I did do it. Maybe I've gotten a little soft and don't do it anymore. Some of it was my eyesight's getting to the point that I couldn't tell one species from another on the wing. And I was just like, nah, I'm not going to do that anymore because I didn't want to break the law. But out of that, you're out there during adverse weather conditions. So as I talked about that is you're in adverse weather conditions. That can be wind. It can be snowy. It can be raining. You're trying to pack all that gear in. You have your overloading situation with that, which could lead to potential swamping of that boat in those adverse conditions. So you're in that weather condition that's there. Second one is not sticking to the time frames that you've told them that you would be at home, which now will basically may result in a call of somebody to come out and try to find you to see if you're okay. And that's really a big one. Communicate if you're going to vary from your plans if you can. Make sure that you communicate well what those plans are and stick to those plans. And then lastly, a lot of times these boats are only used for certain times of the year. So the maintenance on them was not really well taken care of. And that either can be electrical to fuel issues. And it may have ran really good for a little bit yesterday in the bucket on the hose. And then when they went out, it didn't run all that well for them. So like we do with the big boats, tell people, take care of them, make sure they're serviced, make sure you run ethanol-free gasoline, drive the extra distance. It will be well worth the few more cents per gallon that you pay for it. And then when you're done with them and you're going to store them for a little bit, run them dry. Ethanol-free and run it dry is the best thing. And then fuel doesn't store all that long, so run them through some other machine so you're not having 6.5 gallons of bad fuel on you.
I've actually gotten quite used to finding that ethanol-free fuel. Very easy to find. In fact, there's an app out there, or you can even check out the website to find it.
Yeah, I think it's a Clear Fuel app, if I remember right with that one.
I think so.
It's awesome to be able to show you what gasolines are there. It's a little harder for us with the state because we have certain fuel stations that we can use. So we have to look at that and then look on another website that we have to make sure that we can fill up there and use our cards to fill up with. But for the general public, oh, heck yeah, that Clear Fuel app is awesome, or use the website. It's great. So, yeah, do that, and it's a lot more available than what you think it is.
Agreed. I like that you brought up maintenance, too. I know lighting can be a challenge oftentimes with boating. Electricity and water don't play well together sometimes, and corrosion is a happening thing, and you don't want to wait till morning of to find out your lighting don't work.
Yeah, and I've been on a couple of those early morning safety checks, and I didn't want to ruin people's trips and stuff, but we want to make sure they had the proper lighting out there. So make sure you do have the proper lighting, and if it's not working, and for some reason the lighting in your boat's worse than the lighting on a Christmas tree, or incandescent lighting on a Christmas tree where one bulb goes out, they all go out. You don't know which bulb it is. Sorry about my Christmas punt. But you can go buy battery-operated navigation lights that are clamp-on. They're inexpensive if you just don't want to figure it out. So that's a great way to work around, or maybe a good spare to have on the boat.
I like that. That's the way I think. Heck with the rest of the system. There's a workaround. You can work around without dealing with that. That always is a win, or a backup at least.
Yep. And really, we're talking about very simplistic boats with that, and maybe the dog, when it was getting in and out, your wires weren't attended right, and somehow a connection got popped loose. But again, you're in adverse conditions, and if you go from different areas that are kind of estuaries that have a little bit of salt there, it's just, as you said, that water and electrical, there's going to be corrosion over time. And so it just happens. So if you're good at it, fix it. If you're not good at it, find a workaround, and that could be the clamp-on battery-operated lights.
I like the way that you're thinking. It's also a great cheap gift idea. I mean, those lighting systems, under $10, you can come up with something usually.
Yep, you can.
All righty then, let's take a quick break. Be back in a few minutes. When we return, we'll continue our discussion with Mr. Ty Hunter with Utah's boating program. And when we come back, we're talking ice fishing safety. Stick around, more fun is on the way here on Western Life Radio.
I'm Phil Douglas from the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources. Each winter, the DWR conducts sleigh rides to see Rocky Mountain elk at the Hardware Wildlife Management Area, located 17 miles east of Hiram, Utah, in the beautiful Blacksmith Fork Canyon. Friendly drivers, powerful draft horses, comfortable sleighs, and up-close experience with the elk make this one of Utah's great wildlife traditions. Visit our website. Oh, what fun it is to ride.
Never drink and ride. Alcohol and snowmobiles do not mix. Alcohol slows down your physical and mental reactions, affecting balance, coordination, and most importantly, judgment. It also greatly reduces your risk of hypothermia. Know how prescription drugs affect you before riding. This information is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
Keep yourself safe this winter season. Wear layers to protect yourself from winter's cold. Also keep a hat, scarf, and mittens on hand as essential winter gear. Select footwear appropriate for snow and slush, and be sure to keep extra dry clothing in your vehicle in case you get wet. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio. This year, give the gift of fun. Come to Sportsman's Warehouse to check off your Christmas shopping list. At Sportsman's Warehouse, you'll find the gifts that keep on giving. Products your family and friends can use throughout the year in all their outdoor pursuits. Whether their passion is hunting, fishing, camping, hiking, or anything in between, Sportsman's Warehouse has the perfect gift. Still can't decide? A gift card is always a favorite if it's from Sportsman's Warehouse. Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside. Choose your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities.
Yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Woo! Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure. Explore Utah and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov. Predator hunting is growing in popularity. We're pulling the trigger on a great excuse to get outside next on Western Life Radio.
When carrying a firearm, always treat it as if it were loaded. Always keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you're ready to fire. Never let your muzzle point at anything you're not willing to destroy. And always be sure of your target, its environment, and any other safety hazards. This announcement has been brought to you by TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Hunting predators is a great excuse to get outside and bring in a little extra holiday income. Brant Taylor, with Taylor Gunsmithing, heads outdoors to hear the call of the wild.
It's time to go out hunting Wiley. The pelts will be getting good. That hair's almost 2 inches long on them. There's some good value there, and then there's the bounty on them also. You could make nearly $100 per coyote this winter. There's all kinds of expenses that you can defray a little bit, but there's gas or diesel to get out to hunt and ammunition. Be sure and have your GPS or your phone so that you can mark where you got the coyote. They require that now to collect the bounty. I believe you have to take the lower jaw also. Check on the DNR website and find out. If you spend the time, you can make it pay. Everything takes some skill, and if the coyotes have been hunted before, they get pretty smart. If the call's away from you, the attention of the animal isn't going to be on you, so that you can do a little more moving without them seeing you, but not very much. 223 is really popular, 22, 250, all of those, and I've killed more coyotes with my 30-06 than anything else, though. I deal with Davidson's. You can see their inventory on galleryofguns.com. If you see something you want there, contact me. I'll give you the price that I can sell it for.
Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures.
I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.
Snowmobile clubs and associations are the root of nearly all snowmobile trails. They work with landowners and government agencies, hold fundraisers, clear brush and downed trees, do trail signing, build bridges, and spend the winter grooming trails. Snowmobile clubs also teach young riders to enjoy the sport safely. Join a club where you ride to help support trails, have fun, and share great experiences. Brought to you by the American Council of Snowmobile Associations and the Federal Highway Administration. Visit snowmobileinfo.org.
Hey, let's hit the lake. Put on your life jackets and let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I won't drown and I don't have to wear my life jacket? Will I be invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my life jacket too. Anyone can drown, no matter how old they are.
Accidents do happen. Protect yourself and set an example. Wear the proper safety gear when you're on the water. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Now back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Welcome back to Western Life Radio. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff, host this program. We have Mr. Ty Hunter with us with Utah's boating program. Some years, Thanksgiving weekend can be the beginning of the ice fishing season. I know at least at Schofield, I've been on safe ice Thanksgiving weekend before, but I know a lot of people are anxious to get out there on the hard deck again.
Yeah, I know they are. It's funny, I've been asked this, well, why are you giving ice safety and safety tips and pointers? And it was like, well, back in the day when I was in the field, I used to be an ice rescue instructor. And so this is why I do this. And really, I see it from the point of when I have been out ice fishing and kind of look at people and I go, wow, that person's really not prepared. And that's what we see when we're out on boats, too, is, wow, that person really doesn't have everything there. It would be nice to give them some information. So that's really why I'm doing this, Brian. I love to try to teach. I may be boring as all get out, but I guarantee you that there's some good content in this. So if you can get past my voice and listen to the content in here, this is some good stuff. So when you're thinking about coming out and getting on the ice for this upcoming ice fishing season, start looking at it as, how long has this sheet of ice been out in this lake? Know that the ice does not form uniformly. So it may be 4 inches here, but it may be an inch and a half or less over there. And the over there may be in a matter of feet away from where you actually are at. If you know the body of water, know that wherever water comes into that body of water, that ice is not going to be good in those areas. It could be weak. And just look at it as if it has a lot of snow on it, that ice may not be building as much as it had been prior to snow. That snow will insulate it and keep it to where it may not be building. So it really is dependent upon what those ambient air temperatures are too. And then start to think about the sun that's there. So those are things thinking about getting out on the ice. But then to go out on the ice, number one, you're going to dress for the temperatures, the water temps, dress in layers. Brian, you've talked about wearing a life jacket out with you. That's a great insulating layer, and it's a great insurance policy for you on that one. We've talked about ISOLs, the little spikes. Again, get on the internet. You can look those up. They have different types. I like the ones that don't have the really long spikes. Really long spikes means that you may not be able to get the spike all the way in. I've seen people build them out of screwdrivers, and they've left the spike side a little too long from the handles. I like something that is sitting probably 3/4 of an inch at a maximum for the spike. Really, we just need something to get in there and start gripping on that ice. You get something that's a little too long, you may not be able to penetrate the ice and actually get the leverage you need to pull you up out of the hole that you've created. So ISOLs are amazing to have. I like to have them on a string where they wrap around my neck. Sometimes, like the old-style mittens, I had the piece of yarn between each mitten, so you didn't lose them when you were a kid. I know kids don't have those now, but Brian, me and you dealt with some of those when we were out and about.
I have.
So
I still do sometimes.
Yeah, have some of those things where you can have them on there. I won't go out in the ice without ice alls. Something to keep your hands warm. You can rent a neoprene glove, but the thing is that'll allow the water to your skin. You need to be able to keep your hands dry and then get them in where you can get them warm. Nice little hand warmers. Grandma, they got the little chemical hand warmers where you can break them up and have them burn for a little while. And then they also have battery-operated hand warmers that you can charge off of a USB cord with that one. There's pretty cool stuff that's coming out. You can kind of keep yourself warm with that. But we can get into a whole lot of what makes ice unsafe, and whatever there. But the big thing is know your thicknesses, test drill as you go. Clear ice is much stronger than ice with snow or opaque ice that's snowy and cloudy. If you have a snow load on it, there's already weight on that sheet, and you may be the difference of whether or not that ice is going to be able to hold you or not. And just how long it's been cold, and what are the temps for the day? What are the highs of the day? What's the low temps for the day? And it's a good ice-building season if it's below freezing all the time. But if we start getting 50s and 60s in the day and below freezing in the evening, that ice is going to have some thaw and freeze and thaw and freeze, which will make it not so strong.
That's for sure. It'll cloud that right up. And, boy, it is so much fun to get out there on the ice. It is so exciting to get out there when you're actually walking on water, literally, and able to walk out there to places where you normally can't get to from the shoreline and see the action. I mean, early ice is magical. I mean, you can really get all kinds of bites in just a matter of minutes. You can limit out technically I've limited out in 20 minutes before on Schofield. But that excitement can be a real problem sometimes if you get too ambitious and don't check those conditions. I've grown to really depend on that life jacket, that extra layer, that extra security blanket, just in case I missed something. I proceed pretty cautious, but just in case I missed something, I've got that extra backup.
Yep. That's a great way of approaching it, and I appreciate you doing that. I think I'm looking at from somebody that would respond on incidents like this, thanks. Thanks for doing that, and we would like to say that thanks more to people as they are out there using it. So again, look at that risk assessment and take a good evaluation of what are the risks out there, and can you swim? Can you get yourself out of a hole and up onto that ice sheet? And you start thinking, I can do that with those big boots and these big heavy pants and whatever else. Those big heavy boots and those big heavy pants trap air, and they will help you with some flotation over a smidgen of a period of time, and they will insulate you from that cold. And so I would not ever make a choice not to wear something like that. That is a great choice of wearing those things. It's just, can you get yourself out of there and have the mindset of understanding what you need to do, and don't be the next news story, the evening news. So make a good risk assessment on it and test that ice going out. Now everybody's going to say, well, what is the best thickness of ice to get out there? And frankly, I can't really tell you that portion there. They have some things where they measure ice in the laboratories, and they can go from, this thickness of clear ice, 2 inches of clear ice, to 4 inches of clear ice, to 6 inches of clear ice, can hold these certain things here with that. They're good rule of thumbs, but they're nothing that I would like to just hang my hat on and telling people that you will be 100% safe being out there on the ice at this thickness. That's a decision that you yourself need to make, and you need to evaluate what the conditions you're experiencing. If you're hearing the popping and cracking as you're walking, what are those thicknesses? Is it clear ice? Is it opaque ice? What is it? And let that little sense of self-preservation kick in, and maybe not this time. I've been out on the ice, and I've had a pop and crack and whatever else, and sing and do whatever else. It's building, it's eerie, it's awesome. The fishing has been absolutely amazing. And I've also been out there where a bunch of us gathered around, and then all of a sudden water started piling out of the holes, and the ice started to crack and break, which meant that we overloaded, we put too much weight in that one area. And at that point in time, I was like, I'm done. I don't need to be on the ice anymore. And I packed my stuff up and left. And I waited for some more cold snaps before I could come back and actually be out there. And then I didn't get around a big group of guys. And I didn't have a big group of guys with me. So I made a different risk assessment for me at that point in time.
You make a good point there. And it's hard sometimes because ice fishing tends to be a social sport. You're telling jokes, you're eating sandwiches, you're visiting with your family, you're sometimes getting into these ice tents. It's a very social sport, but you don't want to be too many too close when the ice is too thin. And I'm glad you're saying that, you know, there is no such thing as safe ice. The numbers that you see out there that's out on the internet and other places is based on laboratory conditions. And unfortunately, when we're out there, you got reflections from rocks, or you got wind erosion on it, you got the freeze-thaw cycles, you got springs underneath. None of these things play into a condition like the laboratory where they put a little machine on it and says it'll hold this many pounds before it breaks. That's swell, but there's a lot of other factors. You want to make sure you build in whatever the minimum is plus whatever safety factor you want to put in between that. And I tend to be pretty generous in my older years. I've fallen through ice enough times to know that I want that safety buffer and be generous with that. And no matter what you see online as far as current conditions, I tend to lean into at least 4 to 6 inches, and then I try to be very careful from there. I check the conditions as I work my way out.
Yep, and look at the weather and do the things there. So, yeah, I think that's a great way of looking at things. And then the other thing, too, is I mean, we got to look at this. Wheeled vehicles and tracked vehicles are becoming more and more and more the norm, and you start bringing that extra weight out, you start buzzing around at speeds, that's going to cause different issues because ice will flex. Ice will literally create a wave as you start to move on it fast. And that also can cause issues if we start to get the cracks and ridges and other things that are around there and even along the sides of it. So make sure that you're taking into consideration as you're bringing some type of transportation vehicle out on the ice that it is definitely thick enough there and that you're traveling at speeds that really aren't going to start to create that wave and cause situation where you're going to punch through.
I've seen that before, especially out at Strawberry. That could be pretty spooky sometimes. You don't expect that on hard ice.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you don't feel it, especially if you're on the vehicle with that. Others around that are not in the vehicle may feel a little change as something's going past. I don't even really know how to liken it. It's probably not as defined, as you'd say, as you know, you've ever been on some of the newer overpasses, stopped at a stoplight, and all of a sudden the big truck comes on the overpass and your vehicle starts to move around because of the seismic springs that are on that, the flexing that that overpass has. That's a lot of what you could feel depending on the weight of the vehicle that you would feel on ice. Just take that into account and be careful with it. And we just want everybody to be safe out there and to have a good time. And we don't want your vehicle going in the drink. And we don't want a vehicle with people going into the drink. So that causes some other things, and that goes into other realms and areas where we as in the Department of Natural Resources start to go, that's not good for the water. We need to potentially get that out. And some agencies will require it to be taken out, and it won't be cheap. So make a good decision. Have a good decision-making paradigm. I'm going to say that. So,
very good advice. I know you mentioned earlier you talked about the spikes. If someone does fall in the drink, just as a reminder again, what's the technique to get out? It's not like you think it will be. It's not like you can just step out and get out again.
Yeah, it's not going to be there. So your big thing is that you need to remember is you're going to go in the cold water, and that cold water is going to hit your body, and it's going to hit it fast. Your biggest thing is to get your hands out, get them out there, and try to go through the cold shock effect of your breathing, and you're going to start hyperventilating. And that's going to go for a minute or more. It will go away. Once you can get in there, get your composure, start looking where you have those ice balls, get them up, and then you're going to start hooking them in, and then you're going to start kicking. You try to get your legs even. You want to be flat with the ice sheet, as flat as you can, and then you're going to army crawl with those spikes using those. That's your grip. and you're going to army crawl with those spikes out of that hole. And then if you can continue to slide in that army crawl, go. Once you're out onto that shelf, you can either keep army crawling or you can roll. And it may be that you roll left so many times and then right so many times, you're going to have to zigzag a little bit. But you want to get as far away from that hole as you can. And one thing that I did leave out on that is that you want to turn around to the direction you came from, and that's the direction you want to go. So if you fall in, you want to hurry and get yourself up on that sheet, scoot over to where you can get yourself to where you came from, that direction that you accessed the ice and came from, and then go towards safe ice at that point in time.
Glad you said that, because it's real easy to say, oh, you know what, I'm going to go the direction I'm pointed. It may be thinner going that direction. It may get worse.
Yep.
At least you know where you came from. You may have a chance. And, again, that rolling back and forth will disperse the weight, give you a chance without just punching new holes as you try to get out.
And if you were a bystander and see that somebody goes in, oh, please do not run right up to the hole. You're going to be the second victim in that situation. Maybe even the third, fourth, and fifth in that situation. You can get on YouTube. You can look at ice falls that have gone bad. I used a lot of them when I would teach the classes to our rangers, and it's just amazing to see how something can go from good to bad and how quickly it can happen. So if you are somebody, a bystander, who wants to render help, remember this adage of you're going to try to reach, you're going to throw, and then you're going to go, but you're going to go for help. But you will not leave that area unless you have somebody there that can actually mark and keep an eye on that person so you can go for help. That's where you're going to try to yell and get somebody else to go for help. Your main job is to watch that person and talk them through. And you can talk them through the simple things that I just said. Get your arms up on that ice shelf. Turn around, look at me. Kick with your feet really, really hard. Flatten your body out. Okay, start to crawl. Start to crawl. See if you can get out of that hole. Start to move, move, move. Coach them through that. And that's the type of things that you can do. You could literally save somebody's life by just coaching, to be that rough coach and tell them to do things that are hard and get them to do it, and they can save themselves. That's really the most important way. A lot of people can save themselves. They just need to be coached on how to do it.
They just need that reminder. And when you fall in a drink and you get cold, I forget everything. You go blank. You go crud. Now what do I do? That help from the sidelines really is a blessing. It's really helpful. I know I've always had this nightmare in the back of my head. What happens if I end up going under the ice? What if I actually, let's say if I fall through and I somehow get under the hard deck itself again and I can't get my way out again? What's a technique or something to help find that hole again where you fell through?
Well, I hope it never happens. That would only really happen in places with current. So if you're in a place with current, then your ice conditions are pretty bad, because current is one of the issues that will degrade ice thicknesses with that there. So a lot of times I'm going to play more on the more positive of this usually is not going to happen. If you fall, your arm's going to go straight out. You're going to try to keep yourself on that surface or without going below that surface. And there are little chunks of ice and everything around when you fall through the ice. Sometimes it hurts your ribs a little bit as you fall through, hitting that shelf with your ribs. That's okay. Broken rib. If you ended up with a broken rib and fell through and you were able to self-rescue yourself, wow, whoopee, they'll mend. I mean, really, I guess that's a piece that you kind of look at. Probably heartless to say, but you'll mend. You're alive. You'll mend. It'll be okay. And you can work through it. But get your arms out, and you're down in that water. You're going to start to kick and try to get yourself to where you can keep your head above water. Falling under the ice shelf, I don't even really know what to tell you on that one there. That's not a good situation. And that's one that we don't train with our people to say, when you fall in, you do this, because we tell our people when they go out, you're going to have a line connected to you, and you're going to have people tending that line. So I guess I beat it around the bush and didn't answer that question. But, Brian, that is very rare if you're going to go underneath that ice shelf.
Yeah, it's a spooky idea, you know, and I've never experienced that myself. I've fallen through before. Man, I'd hate to fall under that and get under that shelf and not find my way back out again. But I know you've actually done training with your teams before, and that's a pretty intense thing. A lot of people think, well, you know, I'm going to get a little wet for a bit. But as soon as you touch that cold water and it's all around you, that changes the dynamics of everything you ever dreamed of before.
Yep. It is, even for the most level-headed individuals and the most trained individuals, the minute that cold water hits your face and you feel like your head's going to go under the water, there is an instant piece of panic that's going to hit you. And you need to be able to understand that and work through that situation. And the biggest thing is you want to go to the surface as fast as possible. I mean, we have the people where they're out there, they'll be jumping in the holes. We even go to the point, just lay back on your back, put your legs and everything underneath that sheet ice, and scoot your body underneath it, keeping your hands there, and get to where a little bit of water starts to hit your face. I kid you not, with everybody around and a line attached to you, and you're doing that, I don't even know how to explain it. It panics you to death. And it's so you can understand that's what it's going to feel like. And you're not strong enough. Everybody's like, oh, I'm going to hit that ice and I'll be able to get through there. No, you're basically like a balloon in the wind trying to put force on something, and you're not going to be able to do it. That ice is real strong, and you're not going to be able to punch a hole through that ice. So what you've seen on the movies and whatever else, that's not real. So your main thing is keep your body vertical as you go in, and to keep your arms out, and to keep it to where you're not going to go into that water. You just want to create as much surface area and resistance as you're falling in. And then at that point in time, grab hold of the ice shelf, hold you up, and start to get your breathing taken care of. That will subside. And then turn yourself to where you went from, and then work your way out by literally kicking and swimming and army crawling your way out.
And I like your advice also on the awls, the ice awls. A lot of people think, well, you know, bigger is better. But the problem is you don't have that leverage. The smaller it is, if it's within that right distance to get into that softer ice and carve into it, but if you get too long, it wobbles. It doesn't actually grip into anything. You don't get the traction you need if it's too big.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of using them. You don't have to fall in the water to use them. And if you're out there ice fishing, lay down on your belly, get your ice awls out, and start crawling around with them, and you'll understand. You'll understand when you've got too long of picks and or you're holding them wrong. You just won't feel like you can get the grip that you need to be able to move yourself around. And then either find some new ones or modify them to the point to where they work for you.
Excellent advice. It's an exciting time. I know I'm perked up for ice fishing. I look forward to this every year. And I can't wait till I see something out there I can get out there on. And Schofield's one of the first waters. There's Huntington up on the Skyline Drive also that tends to be one of those waters. But there's other ones out there too. And again, you mentioned earlier, the snow. If snow falls after it starts icing up, that'll mess it up sometimes. You get layers of slush in between. It weakens the overall thing. It blankets it. There's a lot of dynamics when it comes to ice science.
Yeah, there is. And by no means I'm going to tell you that I'm either an engineer or professor or whatever else. I'm not going to stamp it and go there. It's just the knowledge that I do have. And it's something that I've been trained, that I've read about. Are there new and improved and fang-dangled things out there? Heck yeah, there are. But when it comes down to basic stuff, is you dress for the water, you have a pair of ice awls, you do the investigations, and you start to look at what those conditions are. You make that risk assessment as you're going out, and you continue to make that assessment as you're out on the ice. And just listen to yourself. Just listen to what you've learned, and to look up and learn more about it. You'll actually be able to read that barometer, read those feelings. And if it doesn't feel right, don't go.
I've been there, and you hate to go back again without playing, but I'd rather get to go back at all. And I guess while we're still talking ice safety, I know somewhere in the works over the years there's been this wives' tale that popped up. Throw a rock out there on the ice. That'll tell you whether it's safe or not. You know, that's not one of your indicators. I noticed that didn't come up in your discussion earlier as one of your safety tips.
Yeah, I didn't put it out there. I thought of it, and I started moving around, and I was like, should I mention that? So thanks. Bring it up there. Really, if you weigh 150 pounds, can you pick up a 150-pound rock and throw it out there? Look at your risk assessment at this point in time. You're picking up a rock that may weigh 5-6 pounds and throwing it out on the ice. Really, all you're doing is throwing rocks out on the ice. And you're going to potentially make that ice weaker because then you have something that can be heated by the sun. You're putting rocks in places that may be affecting boat travel in the spring if it's a shallow area, which usually you can't throw a rock that far. So just stop throwing rocks out on the ice. It's not helping the situation.
I've run into rocks with my ice auger, and it dings up the sharp edges of your auger, and you can't see them sometimes after a snowfall, and then, dang it, it puts you out of business, or you're spinning that blade without getting much traction on the cutting edge. So don't throw rocks on the ice. Please.
Just don't do it. Please don't do it. You want to go throw rocks? Go to a gravel pit or something. I don't know.
Go somewhere where you're not going to go fishing.
Yeah. So I think that's a big one that kind of come out there, and I tried to stay away from that, but thanks for bringing it up. I think that's a good thing that we need to be able to tell the folks again is don't throw rocks. And like I said, if you can't pick up a rock and move it and throw it to that place that you want to go, then there's no use of even giving it a try.
Exactly. Thank you, Mr. Ty Hunter, joining us with Utah's Boating Program. Merry Christmas to you. Happy holidays. We'll be visiting with you soon in the new year.
Thanks.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE. Improve the accuracy of your firearm with some fine tuning from Taylor Gunsmithing. We're making some adjustments next on Western Life Radio. Choose your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities.
Yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Woo! Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure. Explore Utah and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov.
Be safe this winter driving season. Make sure your car is in proper working condition and is stocked with blankets, warm clothing, booster cables, a fire extinguisher, and tools. Also, be sure to include bottled water, high-calorie snacks, a first aid kit, flashlights and batteries, a shovel, and ice scraper. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio.
When
When snowmobiling, be prepared. Keep your machine in top condition. Always carry a toolkit, first aid kit, emergency supplies, and spare parts. Always let someone know where you're going and when you'll be back. Use the buddy system and never snowmobile alone. This message is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
Accurate shooting is a combination of fine firearm tuning and practice on the range. Brant Taylor with Taylor Gunsmithing gets us started.
I just finished a job and the guy's got a picture of his target on my Facebook. That's really satisfying to be able to help someone shoot better. I've got a rebarrel job in right now that I got to finish up. I want more accuracy than they had before. So a good barrel and true action is very important to accurate shooting. If you have a good trigger, it's a lot easier to make good shots. Well, the website's taylorgunsmithing.com, and Taylor Gunsmithing on Facebook will find that page. And I try to post something about once a week on that. If you want to keep track of me, that's a good way. The weather's been quite nice. Lee Cave has been pretty busy still, but it's always fun to get out and shoot. Just don't forget the safety rules. You just keep hearing of people who don't follow the safety rules and end up shooting themselves or someone else. It's completely preventable.
Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.
Hi, I'm Phil Douglas from the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources. Each winter, the DWR conducts sleigh rides to see Rocky Mountain elk at the Hardware Wildlife Management Area, located 17 miles east of Hiram, Utah, in the beautiful Blacksmith Fork Canyon. Friendly drivers, powerful draft horses, comfortable sleighs, and up-close experience with the elk make this one of Utah's great wildlife traditions. Visit our website. Oh, what fun it is to ride.
Kindness. It's a single smile, a thoughtful word, a small, unexpected gesture. Whatever the act may be, it's something we call kindness. Yet sometimes in such a chaotic world, people forget the power that kindness holds. Kindness can brighten a moment, lift someone's spirits, turn a bad day into a good story. Kindness can make someone's week, or month, or year. Kindness can restore faith in humanity, and some say it can even make us healthier. All with a simple, small, perhaps unseen or anonymous act. So, think about this. What would happen if a small act of kindness sparked another small act of kindness, and then another, and another, and another? What if kindness became contagious? And all the small gestures done by many would make an impact felt around the nation, around the world. Imagine that power. And all it takes is one kind act a day.
This year, give the gift of fun. Come to Sportsman's Warehouse to check off your Christmas shopping list. At Sportsman's Warehouse, you'll find the gifts that keep on giving. Products your family and friends can use throughout the year in all their outdoor pursuits. Whether their passion is hunting, fishing, camping, hiking, or anything in between, Sportsman's Warehouse has the perfect gift. Still can't decide? A gift card is always a favorite if it's from Sportsman's Warehouse. Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside.
And mountains, discovering life in the backcountry.
You've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and Western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.